This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 273. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
On a clear day, you can see Forever Evil, Dr. DiDio's 3D House of Villains, and more DC bloopers. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, September 8th, 2013. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts, and blogs. Or you can subscribe via iTunes, where you can leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter @sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. Well, Villains Month has begun at DC, and that means no regular titles coming out, at least from the...
In the main 52 universe.
Right. But before we get into the gimmick covers, Forever Evil, number one, by Johns and Finch. So the crime syndicate has won, apparently off-panel, and the Justice Leagues are dead. Not.
Well, that doesn't make any sense at all.
DC's bad guys are being offered a choice to join this new society or die. We start with Luthor in a helicopter during this blackmail job he's doing on this guy, when all power in Metropolis goes out, including the copter itself. And so he ends up crashing into his own building, kind of convenient. Grid, the creature that came out of Cyborg robot thing, is knocking out the power of cities one by one, and we get his catchphrase, "Have a nice day." Nightwing is in Gotham dropping off Zaz, who apparently was in Chicago for some reason, has a quick conversation on the phone with Barbara when he's suddenly nabbed by Superwoman, who's one of the crime syndicate members. Flash's rogues are breaking out Trickster from Iron Heights, and this speedster runs in, maybe not the Flash, who then breaks out everybody from Iron Heights. Power Ring and Deathstorm, also from the crime syndicate, break the prisoners out of Belrive. Back to Luthor, he sees Superman, except he grinds down and snorts kryptonite.
Woo-hoo.
Now, we know from previous continuity that Ultraman actually gets extra power from kryptonite. It's the whole opposite of Superman thing.
Well, you know, that makes a whole lot more sense. I don't know.
Yeah. But before it was just like he just had to be in proximity to it as opposed to he had to snort it. I kind of like that. Arkham's rogues are offered this coin that they're handing out to all the villains and a position in this new society. Two-Face is not a fan, of course, because he has his own coin. The villains meet up at this crashed JLA satellite from a few issues ago of Justice League, and the syndicate makes the offer to all of them, and to prove they're serious about it, Nightwing is brought out by Superwoman and then is promptly unmasked in front of all of them
and identified by name.
Yes, so they all know he's Dick Grayson now. Ultraman, we find out, has a problem with sunlight, again kind of the opposite of Superman. So he ends up creating an eclipse. I don't know if he moved the moon. Somehow he creates an eclipse.
Yeah, that seemed a little weird. And it seemed to affect everywhere.
Right.
You know, so it wasn't like, you know, when you have a lunar eclipse now, it only affects some places.
Exactly.
But this seemed to affect everywhere, which made no sense.
Yeah, I don't get it. And even Luthor realizes this is a job for Superman, but where is he? We do get this fold-out quad splash page with all the villains and the crime syndicate, which seems out of place smack dab in the middle of the issue, but I guess if you're doing a quad page, there's nowhere else you can put it.
I suppose, yeah.
It just seems strange because it had nothing to do with the action that was going on at that point.
Okay. Well, I have a couple questions about this.
Yes.
First of all, why in the world didn't they give this one a special cover?
That's a really good point. I don't understand. I guess to differentiate it from everything else?
Because it just looks like an afterthought now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I would have given this one a special cover.
Right.
Then,
well, there were variant covers.
Yeah, but not one of the 3D special covers.
Right, exactly.
Then Lex Luthor didn't get invited to join this crime squad.
I guess they figured he was probably too much of not a team player to...
Okay.
Although to me, very few villains are team players by definition.
And then it seemed to be a little unclear about this, and then you read the Two-Face issue.
Right.
So it seemed like he was invited to, Two-Face was invited to join in this issue, but then he hadn't heard anything about it and was invited again
right.
in his own cover comic.
Well, you know, you send out a mass email and then you don't realize who was in that group, you know.
Ah, I see. Okay.
All right. So the Villains Month issues, the 3D covers, designed to basically deflect comparisons to the first month of the New 52, which was 2 years ago. So you can't look at an apples-to-apples comparison. They did the same thing last year with 0 month. I'm not going to go into the actual beats of the plots, just overall reviews, because there were a lot of them. Justice League Darkseid 23.1. Ugh, I hate this whole numbering thing. By Pac, Segrea, and Diaz. The 3D cover? Eh, it's okay. The interior art is also okay. The story is an interesting variation on the standard story of Darkseid. And the Forever Evil tie-in? None whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Which was the case of a lot of these.
Yes.
Justice League of America, Deadshot 7.1 by Kint, Basri, Champagne, Carnero, and Bit. The 3D cover I thought was excellent. They took advantage of the 3D effect. The interior art is decent, which it should be because there were so many artists involved. The story is we learn that what he does is tied to his traumatic childhood for Deadshot.
Right.
The Forever Evil tie-in is only at the end and just barely. Justice League Dark Creeper 23.1 by DiDio, Chris Cross, Fiorentino, and Dererick. Doesn't DiDio have another job to do if he has time to write these things?
Yeah.
The 3D cover is okay. The interior art is serviceable. The story is mostly a recap of the story we already heard in Katana. And the Forever Evil tie-in, none whatsoever. Earth 2 Tassad 15.1 by Levitz and Cigar. The 3D story is okay. The interior art is serviceable. There's not really much to the story. It's just Tassad torturing people. There is one interesting thing that I didn't notice and someone pointed out online. There's references to Jack Kirby, who is the New Gods creator. A couple times, he's viewing through some sort of mystical thing this guy at an artist board.
Oh, is that who
and
that's
Jack
to
Kirby.
Be? Ah. Okay.
The Forever Evil tie-in, none whatsoever. The Flash, Grodd 23.1 by Buccolato and Batista. 3D cover is okay. The interior art is good, but it's certainly not Manipul's level. It would have been much better if Manipul had been involved, I think. The story is Grodd is released. He takes over Central City. There is a minimal Forever Evil tie-in. Basically, the crime syndicate is who released him. Green Arrow Count Vertigo 23.1 by Lemire and Sorrentino. 3D cover, ironically not that great for a character called Count Vertigo. To me, that's... Really, you could take advantage of that, and they really didn't.
Yeah, it really is a little flat, isn't it?
Yeah. Interior art is excellent, I thought. Very expressive interior art. We get a major change from the original origin of the character. I really thought it was a great story. I thought it was one of the better ones for this week. But unfortunately, no Forever Evil tie-in, more just a tie-in to the regular Green Arrow title. Green Lantern Relic 23.1 by Vendidian Morales. 3D cover, not applicable, because we didn't end up getting the 3D cover for this. We got the 2D cover.
Ah, that's right, because it, for some reason, didn't show up on your pull.
Yeah. The interior art is impressive, I thought. We've learned for the first time the story of Relic, because he's a new villain. It's not just a recap or a retelling. It's all related to colors and emotions, of course. He came from an alternate universe, which we knew, and this other universe, there were what they called lightsmiths who had these magic poles, which were the equivalent of the Green Lantern rings. It turns out that they were sucking literally the life out of the universe, and he tried in vain to warn them. So we kind of learn why Relic is fighting the Lanterns, because he sees the exact same thing going on.
And is this is all leading into this Green Lantern series they're hyping in the books now, right?
The Lights Out series. Yeah, Lights Out crossover event that's going to start immediately after this, and which kind of explains why the Green Lanterns and all the Crayola Corps are not really involved in Forever Evil.
Okay.
Speaking of Forever Evil, the tie-in is none, but as I mentioned, neither is the Green Lantern storyline really tied in. Superman Bizarro, number one, 23.1 by Fitch.
Bizarro number one.
Bizarro number one, 23.1 by Fish and Johnson. 3D cover is okay. I thought the interior art was decent. The story is actually mostly about Luthor and very little about Bizarro. It's basically how Luthor created Bizarro.
And it really is a whole different story, isn't it?
It's a major variant on what has happened before.
Okay.
But in many versions, Luthor created Bizarro.
Oh, okay.
In other versions, he's actually from another universe or another dimension. But in this case, it's just Luthor using some of Superman's DNA to try to create his own hero.
And you really couldn't have a Forever Evil tie-in here because you couldn't make Bizarro into a real criminal who could follow directions.
Right. Action, Cyborg Superman 23.1 by Nelson and Hawthorne. 3D cover is good, not great. I wasn't all that impressed with it. Interior art is also okay. We do get a major rewrite of the origin story of Cyborg Superman, but it makes far more sense than the old one did, because there was a whole tie-in to the events of death of Superman. There are a lot of loose ends, and they've pretty much been trying to move away from that. Now they've fully moved away from it. We learn that Cyborg Superman is actually Zor-El, Jor-El's brother, and was created as part of Krypton's destruction.
Right.
No Forever Evil tie-in here either. Batman Joker 23.1 by Kubert and Clark. Now, this was the one that they really pushed, I thought, and this is the one that was in all of the ads. 3D cover was excellent, and what I mean by that is you really see multiple levels going on here.
Yes.
I was very impressed with that. The interior art is also excellent. It's yet another origin story for Joker, but it's all through his mind, so you never really know if it's his origin or not. They've kind of done little variants on this throughout the years of a troubled childhood, but you don't know if it's real or not. Again, no Forever Evil tie-in here. Batman and Robin Two-Face 23.1 by Tomasian March. 3D cover is okay. Interior art I thought was very impressive. The story is Harvey Dent recalling his past while he's walking the streets of a post-syndicate Gotham. The power's out and it's just chaos. He's offered the coin of the society, and he refuses it because he's got his own coin, and more importantly, his coin is what directs him. He doesn't want anyone else directing him. He uses the coin to make decisions. That's it. There's, of course, a major Forever Evil tie-in here, much more than we've seen in the other issues. Detective Poison Ivy, 23.1 by Friedolfs and Pina. 3D cover I thought was excellent here. Interior art is decent. We do get a minor variation on the standard origin for Poison Ivy and a very minor tie-in to Forever Evil in that there's chaos in Gotham because of the Syndicate. So overall, they really don't tie very much into Forever Evil. I almost feel like some of these were stock stories that they had sitting around somewhere. They have so little to do with what's going on in the rest of the title.
Like they just wanted to tell this story and had to have an excuse to do it.
Right. All right, it's time for DC's Bloopers of the Week. And I want to thank HasDCDoneSomethingStupidToday.com for both of these. Blooper number one, Blackman and Williams III leave the Batwoman title. They announced it via Twitter. Why? Because of editorial interference. They were forced to drop a new origin for Killer Croc, which kind of I can understand if they had other plans for the character. They didn't want them to go in and make major changes.
Mm-hmm.
They changed the original ending of the current story arc to a major extent. So what the details of that, we don't know. But the far more important thing is they decided that Kate and Maggie cannot wed. They would not have them getting married in the title. So the big controversy is the refusal based on the wedding part or on the gay part. DC's response, DC's heroes shouldn't be happy, per DiDio. His quote is, they shouldn't have happy personal lives. They're committed to helping others. I don't buy it.
I think that that may, in fact, be what they want. But you know what? Marvel has angsty heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Let DC have happy heroes.
And I'm not saying everything should be peaceful. Obviously, you've got to have conflict in this. There's no question.
But it would be so much better if you had a happy home life to come home to.
It can't just be constant angst.
Yes.
That's the problem. Now, as cover, as far as I'm concerned, Mark Andraco, a gay writer, is taking over the title. And the fact that they got him so quickly, they are acting like they were flat-footed on this, that they had no idea that Williams was going to leave.
Mm.
So, but it happened within like a day and a half in order to be announced at a con this weekend. Blooper number two. DC announces an open artist contest where the winner gets a page in the new Harley Quinn Zero title. DC gave them instructions as to what to draw. The instructions were four different panels where Harley is trying to commit suicide, with the last picture being in the nude. Cue internet backlash. And this will really go over well, I'm sure, with anti-suicide groups and women who already have quite a bone to pick with DC in terms of
everything.
Everything in terms of female creatives. And in terms of how they depict women in the DCU. So, yeah.
Yeah.
First off, what needs to happen is somebody needs to be between DiDio and his phone so he can't send out Twitter messages, because he clearly doesn't think before he does it. And second, there needs to be somebody, surely somewhere in the Warner empire, there's a PR guy who can do a better job than what is being done at DC right now.
Indeed.
I think both of these things could have been handled far better than they were. I'm not saying they were good decisions, but how they're handled afterwards is terrible.
Yeah, I don't get it, but...
All right, before we get out of here, it's time to America's fastest growing new game show.
Guess who's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly? Are you ready, Mark?
I am ready.
I just pulled it up. I'm going to start it here.
Okay.
Okay.
TV related?
Yes.
It's not the TV... fall preview, is it?
No.
Okay. I didn't think that was out yet. Is it one show?
Yes.
Is it a show on one of the major networks?
No.
Is it on cable?
Yes.
Okay. Is it on pay cable?
You mean premium cable?
Premium cable.
No.
Okay. Is it a comedy?
No.
Is it a drama?
Yes.
Drama. Okay. Is there one person on the cover?
No.
Two?
Yes.
A man and a woman?
No.
Two men?
Yes.
Two men on the cover. It's... let's see. Two men on the cover. Let's see. I assume it's a well-known show?
Yes.
Okay, otherwise it wouldn't be on the cover. Is it a new show?
No.
Okay. Hmm. Let's see, could it be... been a lot of stuff about Breaking Bad. Is it Breaking Bad?
It is Breaking Bad.
There's been a lot of stuff floating around since the last season and everything.
You got it. I won't make you name Bryan Cranston.
Bryan Cranston.
And...
yeah. Paul, right. Aaron Paul, I think, is the other guy.
Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Want to remind you to go to SF Podcast Network to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including our From the Pop Culture Bunker video podcast. You can subscribe via iTunes, and please leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.